Did you know that Susan B. Anthony's dying words were a lament that she worked her whole life to get women the vote and never did, especially for herself? Or that Franz Liszt died right after watching a performance of Wagner's Parsifal? Or that Abraham Lincoln's wife was allowed to embrace her dying husband for only a few moments before she was led away sobbing? Details like these are what make the New York Times Book of the Dead such great reading, and it's a big one, a compilation of 320 of the newspaper's obituaries of noted figures from the last 165 years. The entries are not only a great who's who in history, but also a window into the times in which they died. William McDonald is the Times obituary editor. He compiled the entries. We spoke with him last November when the book was released. I asked him what he thought it was about obituaries that makes them more popular than ever now.
I think people like to read about other people's lives in general. I think there's a certain amount of curiosity and maybe nosiness at times. But I think they tell you about, you know, how important people live, how they got to be where they were. And it's good narrative writing. It's biography. It's history. I think it's a rich part of the paper.
Well, also, you can see how they were viewed in the time. Here's the beginning of Henry Clay's obituary. He died in 1852. It reads, "How the concerns of life and death intermingle. Amid the hot contention of political strife, a slow, dull sound filling every ear brings the long-expected annunciation that Henry Clay is no more." It's just beautiful.
We don't write like that anymore.
Tell us, who was he and what do they have to say about him?
Well, Henry Clay was one of the great orators and one of the great senators of American history. He and Daniel Webster, I think, were the lions of the Senate leading up to the Civil War. And it's a great example of that kind of obituary from that period, very florid.
Well, and you learn, you know, he lost four daughters to an infancy, mm-hmm. two at the age of 14, mm-hmm. Volunteered his legal services to rescue people from slavery. It's got quite a lot of humanity in it. Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's obit was interesting to you, but it was more a news story.
It was. It was one of the interesting things I discovered in looking back at the old newspapers. Lincoln did not get an obituary per se, not the way we would think of one, the complete biography. It was essentially a news report of the great calamity, as it was described in the headline, you know, a blow-by-blow kind of account of what happened at Ford Theater and the aftermath. And, of course, at that point, I don't think Booth had been caught. And the Times really didn't publish an obituary even days later in that sense. That I had to search and found finally a eulogy written by a minister in New York who kind of gave us a kind of overview of his life. But that was essentially it.
Yeah. Well, we learned that pennies were placed on Abraham Lincoln's eyelids, but they were later mm-hmm. replaced by silver half dollars. Details like that.
Yeah. The details in obituaries, I think, are also what draws people. We try to mix both detail and the big picture story, the sweep of history. And so it's that combination, that granular detail with the great historical currents, you might say, that makes it such a good read, I think.
Robert E. Lee, you say an obit that was respectful but unsympathetic.
Well, you know, the Times was, of course, a pro-Union paper. Lee died 5 years after the war ended, so feelings were still raw. And the Times made a point of saying that almost a lament that he had chosen to leave the Union. He was in the Union Army and take up arms against his own country. It talked about him as a traitor. You don't get that kind of kindly uncle that maybe others perceived Lee to be.
Well, they did say he was efficient and prompt.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's not exactly stirring. Dred Scott's staying mm-hmm. with the anti-slavery mm-hmm. movement. It is an obit that acknowledges his contribution, but also concludes that there were so many setbacks for him that they only hope that in his death he has a better freedom.
Yeah. It was kind of a moving obit. It paid tribute to him as a human being, you might say, after the Supreme Court had essentially denied that he was a man or a citizen. And I'm sure this was in 1858, before the Civil War. So to, you know, memorialize a slave in that way was probably a bold thing to do.
A big deal, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Move to Susan B. Anthony. A friend says in her obituary that her last words were, "To think I have had more than 60 years of hard struggle for a little liberty, mm-hmm. and then to die without it seems so cruel."
Yeah.
That's a pretty focused thing to say when you're on your deathbed.
Yeah.
Do we trust it?
That's a good question. That's one of the issues, I suppose, in reading a lot of these, particularly the older obituaries. We don't know what kind of fact-checking was going on back then. A lot of them read like tributes and eulogies, so they'd be very florid. And who knows whether they were just perpetuating legends and urban myths and such. I'd probably read them with at least a medium-sized grain of salt, but they make for good stories, if nothing else.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I mean, it's a terrible story that I'm about to mention, but I didn't realize it was so laid out in Isadora Duncan's obituary when she died in 1927. Mm-hmm. She, of course, the American dancer, very, very flamboyant in her dress. And many people know that she died when she had a scarf wrapped around her neck and it got caught in the wheel of a car. But boy, do they go into the detail in the obituary. She was in Paris, the limousine going at full speed when the scarf suddenly began winding around the wheel and with terrific force dragged Miss Duncan, around whom it was securely wrapped, over the side of the car, precipitating her with violence against the cobblestone street. She was dragged for some... I mean, it goes on and on.
It goes on and on. In that particular story, it was was also more of a news account than, the full-fledged obit. A lot of the obits from those days would often assume the readers knew enough about the subject that they didn't feel they had to go into the biography. And we don't have that attitude now, even though, readers presumably know the story of, say, a David Bowie or, a Muhammad Ali. We still give you the reading experience of the full story. Didn't seem to do that in the old days.
Well, I was thinking a couple of things. First of all, I'm looking at Jim Henson's 1990. After reading Isadora Duncan or even Henry Clay, you then look at the modern day ones, and they seem a little dry. I'm a big fan of theirs, but now that you compare them to the florid writing, they just seem a little dry.
Some can be, even from this book in the later pages, in the later century. One of the issues for the newspaper business, at least back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s even, the obituary, was not considered a prime spot to be in a newspaper. So it would often be considered a backwater and a place where old reporters went to die, in effect. And so you might not get the quality that you would want on some of these major figures. But you're right. The style of prose changes. It becomes much more direct today. We're trying to revive it a little bit. We're trying to be a little more literary, you might say, and take some chances and be a little more creative in our writing. Mm-hmm. But, it's a valid criticism, I think.
Well, it's more, just reflecting on how much more florid writing was,
Yeah, right. It's a very different style. And I'm not sure readers would have the patience for it today, but, we reflect the times.
Or we want to hear every detail of Jim Henson's pneumococcal, infection that killed him. I mean, I'm not sure I want to hear every detail of that.
In the way that you have
Trotsky, we learn how he was killed with a pickaxe.
Right. Very, very descriptive.
Very descriptive.
You are there kind of writing. Again, it was more of a news writing exercise as opposed to, say, a biography.
Right. You point out that some were underplayed. Harriet Tubman has just a couple of paragraphs, died in 1913 and was the Moses of her people, as the first sentence says, led hundreds through her Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. Anybody just completely overlooked?
Yes. Some of the people who you might expect to be in the book or, even in the paper at the time weren't there because they really weren't discovered until much later. And I'm thinking of people like Vincent van Gogh. He did not get an obituary in the Times. Franz Kafka or Chekhov, some of the Russian great Russian writers. I can only assume their work wasn't really widely known, I think, at the time of their deaths. And maybe so it just didn't make no impression.
Wow, Vincent van Gogh did not get an obituary in the Times. What hope do any of us have? William McDonald, New York Times obituary editor and editor of the Book of the Dead. We spoke to him last November about this incredible compilation of New York Times obituaries spanning more than 150 years.